Hi, this is John. I just wanted to give you a heads up before the podcast starts that some of the references that we make here in our chat with Dave Kaufman are a little out of date. We recorded on Sunday and things with Mo Farah and Lou Waldeng have been clarified. The other thing is there's a little bit of a hiss for the first 10 minutes of the podcast and a little bit of crinkling later on. Had a few technical gremlins this time. Hopefully we'll sort those out for next time and it won't affect your listening too much. Enjoy the show. And welcome to Batflips and Nerds, episode 14. We are the podcast that brings you a British take on baseball. Joining me today is Dave Kaufman. Now, Dave is a native Montrealer who's recently moved over to the UK in October. You can hear him on TalkSport 2 at the moment with Nat Coombs. Prior to that, he's worked on some of the biggest stations doing sports and talk radio over in Canada, TSN 690 and CJAD 800. Dave's also a massive, massive Montreal Expos fan and is actually a member of the Expos Nation Committee, which is trying to bring the Expos back to Montreal. So we're going to get into that a bit later on in the conversation, but we'll start off with the pleasantries. How are you this morning, Dave?
I'm very well, John. Good morning.
Thanks very much for taking a bit of time out of your Sunday morning to have a chat. What have you been doing this weekend then, Dave?
Well, it's been a bit of a mix of tennis and politics. My girlfriend and I just moved into a new home in West London, so there's been some tidying and sweeping the floors and moving the couch to make the feng shui all correct. But really a lot of just fretting over what's going on in the States right now, to be honest with you, and kind of hard to keep a smile when you see what's happening. You know, this travel ban is actually affecting friends of mine, and well, as we can see, it's even going to affect some athletes, maybe not in Major League Baseball, but we know that Lou Waldeng, who's a British citizen, a British/Sudanese citizen, could be affected by this, which could mean that when the Los Angeles Lakers go play in Toronto and play the Raptors, he might not be allowed to go. This is a wide-reaching thing, bigger than sports, bigger than any of us, and yeah, it's definitely brought the mood down a little bit.
It certainly has, yeah. Lou Waldeng and indeed Sir Mo Farah spends a lot of his time in Oregon and is Somalian by birth. One of those things, people say that sports and politics don't and never should mix, and it's not a line that I hold personally, and when things like this happen, it really brings it home, doesn't it?
Well, you see, where I have built much of my career around that mix of sports and politics, I've always been fascinated by it, and yeah, growing up, my hero and one of the great heroes of Montreal baseball is Jackie Robinson, who got his professional career start in Montreal with the Royals in 1946. The Royals were the AAA franchise for the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I think because of that and hearing my grandfather tell me stories of watching Jackie Robinson play at Delormier Downs in Montreal, I've always seen that crossover between sports and politics and just how much sports do affect change. We just saw President Obama. He used to say it many times that without Jackie Robinson, he would never have been in the White House.
That seems absolutely true. I mean, Jackie Robinson, his story isn't well enough known over here in the UK, which is a real shame. It's a really inspirational one, one that means so much to, I would say, almost every citizen of the United States. And indeed, you're right that President Obama has mentioned that a number of times himself. I wonder, just if we just dwell on this topic briefly, what do you think that the sports world can do right now? If there's anything, could people like Lou Waldeng be coming out and saying things? What about other people who are playing on teams with some of these players? Do you think it's time for them to be making their voices heard?
Well, I think we're already seeing it. LeBron James is being extremely vocal about it. In fact, I feel like basketball is leading the way right now. LeBron has made all kinds of comments. Just recently, LeBron said something this week about how NBA voting for the All-Star game has been unpredictable and ridiculous, but that's okay. It mimics real life. Look at who the president is right now. We've seen Steve Kerr, the coach of Golden State, make many comments. Greg Popovich, the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, also has been extremely vocal about Trump and the suppression of human rights. We haven't heard much from the baseball world yet, but the season hasn't started. Although, I did find it telling that the Cubs went to the White House in the final days of the Obama administration. Normally, a team doesn't go so soon after winning the World Series. It's usually done the following season, normally to coincide with a trip to Washington when the team is playing the Nationals, if it's an NL team or if Interleague allows that to happen. I think that there's a lot that can be done. This is very few people have the platform that professional athletes do. Dave Zirin, who is one of my favorite journalists, you can follow him on Twitter at Edge of Sports. He's very vocal about this as well and has written extensively on it. I would suggest to the listeners to follow him and to really be able to see that intersection of sports and politics and where it collides. It's important for athletes to speak out right now. We see it with, frankly, with the National Football League right now, Super Bowl coming up. Zirin was recently speaking about an unscientific poll that a journalist did that said that 90-something percent of African-American National Football League players polled were against Trump, whereas 100% of white NFL players were for Trump.
Wow, I hadn't seen that. That's absolutely crazy. And I think in terms of baseball, the very few that I've seen making any statement in one way or the other have certainly been pro-Trump. I remember seeing a clip from one of the MLB Network shows where Brian Dozier, the Twins second baseman, had been made to stick a Twins logo over a Make America Great Again hat as though that was covering up the sentiment. And indeed, after the election, there was a bit of furore around Jake Arrieta and making some rather unsavoury comments on Twitter about Hollywood being put back in its place and should toddle off and join Canada, which he's since sort of backtracked away from, but rather unsatisfactorily. That's really amazing, though, that NFL poll, that completely.
Yeah, I think it was only of about 30 or 40 players, but still extremely telling and very scary and definitely has me in the corner of the Atlanta Falcons for next Sunday's Super Bowl matchup.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mr. Brady's had every opportunity to step away from that conversation, hasn't he? And he has tactfully avoided it, which says everything itself, doesn't it?
It truly does. But I think it's important for athletes to speak out. I think it's important for athletes to follow the John Carlos Tommy Smith model. Those were the two track and field athletes who at the 1968 Mexico City Olympics raised their fists in the air for Black Power during the American National Anthem. I think that when you have a microphone, when you have a soapbox, and you have something that you believe in strongly, I think it's your duty to speak out.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a really interesting and fascinating diversion, and I'm somewhat tempted to sort of move our order around a bit, given that we're on politics. I was going to come to the Montreal Expos a little bit further into the conversation, but let's strike while the iron's hot.
As you wish.
I guess that you could, if you were so inclined, talk about the current position of the Montreal Expos as a completely political situation. But for those who of us over here in the UK, perhaps who haven't got quite a grasp on the background and aren't as embedded and embroiled in the detail as you are, Dave, can you just give us the sort of quick and dirty reminder as to what's happened with the Montreal Expos and why the club, as it is, hasn't existed since 2004?
Well, they relocated. They are now the... I have trouble saying it even. No, I'm not really. They are now the Washington Nationals, and they have been since the 2005 season. Much of my life as an Expos fan was sitting in an empty Olympic stadium in Montreal and hearing conversations either at the bar with friends or at the dinner table with my family talking about how the team was going to leave, that the fans didn't support them, that the ownership was lackluster, that it was basically a failed experiment in Montreal. And I never bought into that. I always stayed steadfast in the belief that if the Expos were run properly, it would have been a success. But that you can kick a dog enough times and it'll eventually stop returning to its owner. And that's what happened to the Montreal Expos. Many say that the death knell of the team was the 1994 strike. When baseball went on strike, when the players went on strike in 1994, on August the 12th, I believe it was, the Expos had a record of 74-40. They had never had such a good record. We had a 6-game lead on the Atlanta Braves, and it was really shaping up to be the year that the Expos would win the World Series. Before that, the closest that they had come was in 1981 when they lost to the Dodgers in the NLCS. They had a lead in the ninth inning. Rick Monday hit a home run. The Expos have forever called that Blue Monday, and it was an infamous day in baseball history in my city and frankly across the country. That in the early 1980s, the Blue Jays were still nascent, and the Expos were Canada's team. They were broadcast coast to coast on the CBC. I've heard stories from friends in Toronto and Vancouver of being in classrooms that day and teachers wheeling out televisions or radios and canceling the lessons so that everybody across the country could listen or watch that Expos game. And 94 was a heartbreaker. And even worse than what happened in 1994 was the fire sale that occurred a few months later during the offseason, where suddenly the Expos didn't have Larry Walker, Marquise Grissom, Ken Hill, John Wetland. It was a fire sale. They got rid of all of our best players, and the team came back the next year a shadow of its former self and really never recovered. There were a couple of moments in the 10 years that followed that gave hope. 1996, the Expos were in it until the final weekend of the season, nearly stole that wild card spot. In 2003, which was, I think, for me, my favorite season as a baseball fan, the Expos were in, they held the wild card position until the 1st of September. And then Major League Baseball didn't allow them any September call-ups. MLB owned the team after 2002. There was an attempted contraction, and we don't want to get into the dirty business of Jeffrey Loria too much on today's podcast, but at that point, Loria had owned the team, then sold the team, and there was a bit of a trading of horses with John Henry, which allowed Loria to have the Marlins, Henry to have the Red Sox, and then every other team took a controlling interest in the Expos. And unfortunately, they weren't run fairly. And I think that's really what it comes down to. You can't expect a fan base to support a team that isn't being run fairly. And Expos weren't given a shot. They weren't given a fair shot. And that was heartbreaking. It was very difficult to see as a fan. Frankly, when they left in 2004, they were averaging about 4,000 fans a game in our cavernous, nearly 50,000-seat Olympic Stadium. And it was, you know, every day of that, I was a season ticket holder and attended just about every game that season. There were roughly 59 games at home that year, because the other remaining games were being played in San Juan, Puerto Rico, which was also a disastrous move, frankly. It forced the Expos at one point to have a 27-day, 26-game road trip that included a flight from Seattle to San Juan, which would be like flying from London, England to Houston, Texas, and playing a game the following day. I don't know how the Players Association ever allowed it, but basically, as I conclude this rant that feels a little bit dated right now, because frankly, it's never looked sunnier. Things have never looked better as an Expos fan, including probably when they played. Seems like we're going to get that team back, that Commissioner Manfred understands the plight that someone like John McHale, the COO of Major League Baseball, has been so incredibly supportive of what we've been trying to achieve. And now there seems to be money behind the team, a mayor in Montreal who supports the initiative to bring baseball back and is in fact quite passionate about it. And hopefully one day we'll be able to say that bygones will be bygones. And, you know, I'll tell you, John, when the Expos first left and I would walk around wearing my tricolored Expos hat, people would laugh at me. The Expos were not something to be proud of. in the months and years after the team left. People were embarrassed with how it ended, and there was a sense of almost shame about it. And that has turned around, and the nostalgia is in full force. And now one of the highest grossing, best-selling hats in baseball is the Expos cap. You don't see that many of them in London, but you do see them in North America a lot, and hopefully that'll change soon as well.
Maybe you can change that trend. You just need to be wearing it out and about around West London. It's a pretty iconic logo.
I promise. I try. I wore it to the Women's March last Sunday, and got quite a few compliments on it. It was the first time that anybody had ever mentioned or noticed it in London. I usually wear it and think, I wonder if people know what this is.
And they did. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was nice to see. It's always a warming feeling when someone says, let's go Expos, when I walk by so far from home.
So just sort of taking in everything that you said there, there's quite a lot. I mean, it's incredibly detailed. As with all things in history, it's another situation that was, in some respects, nobody's fault and everybody's fault all at the same time.
Well, to blame the fans, I think, is completely irresponsible. And that was the common refrain from much of the rest of the league. It was, well, you guys didn't support your team. And you know, you can point back to all kinds of historical precedents. I remember in the early 1980s to the mid-1980s when the Atlanta Braves were averaging 3,000 or so fans a game. In the early 1980s, the New York Yankees were averaging 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 fans at Old Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. And if you want to go way back to something like Ted Williams, his final game in Boston, and I think it was the 1961 season, that wonderful short story written by John Updike, The Hub Fans Bid Kid Adieu. I believe that the attendance at Fenway Park was 12,000 that day.
Well, I didn't know that. One of the greatest sportsmen of all time inspires one of the greatest pieces of writing of all time, seen by only 12,000 people. That's remarkable.
I can't remember that, John, but there was something similar to that for Maris's 61st home run. There were very few people in the stands at Yankee Stadium that day. It's attendance is cyclical, and it's that way in almost every city. And unfortunately, the cycle in Montreal coincided with so many bad things happening to that team. And frankly, one of the worst stadiums in baseball. The Big O is a, from the outside, it looks like a cross between an alien spaceship and a toilet. And I don't have much better to say about the inside of it, frankly.
So you said at the end there that there was hope. You've got a supportive mayor. You've got Commissioner Manfred making positive noises. And we said at the outset of this conversation that you yourself were a member of the committee of the Expos Nation. Can you just sort of tell us a little bit about that organization? What who's involved? What have you been doing? And what sort of petitions can you make on the league and on the local politicians to try and turn this thing around and get baseball back in Montreal?
Well, what started pretty much as a Montreal Expos Historical Preservation Society has really grown into so much more. Expos Nation was, it's not the money side. And I want to be very clear about that. It's the fan side. So what we've done is we've published newsletters. We've organized fan rallies. There was a wonderful pitch and catch event organized a few years ago at Jerry Park, the old stadium where the Expos first played. And Steve Rogers, one of the great pitchers in the history of the team, was there for that. We've left the money side up to the business community of Montreal. And the business community of Montreal has really stood up and done a fantastic job of that. What Expos Nation has done has galvanized the fan base. We've organized events, baseball watching parties, nights at bars where you can feel like you're with like-minded people. It's a wonderful feeling to be able to show up somewhere head to toe in Expos finery and not feel like you're alone. It's a group of fans that care and has grown to several thousand strong through our database. I believe that on Facebook, it's about 160,000 strong. On Twitter, it's nearing the 10,000 or so. But it was the opportunity for Montreal baseball fans to form a group and say, hey, we're still here, we still care, and we miss our team. We've arranged bus trips to Cooperstown for Hall of Fame ceremonies. That and there have been a couple of trips to Toronto to watch Blue Jays games where we've really overtaken the stadium. It's been just a section strong, but you can hear us at a Blue Jays Rays game a few years ago, and we're just yelling, "Let's go Expos, let's go Expos." And players on the field were acknowledging it and cheering us on. It's really one of the happiest things I've ever been a part of, this Expos Nation. For all of the sadness when they left, to see how many people feel the same way, feel that hurt, it's not a common thing to lose your team in professional sports, more so in North America than here. But I know from speaking with my girlfriend that this has happened. It's not unprecedented. There was a soccer team.
Wimbledon,
exactly. And the fans made enough of a stink that eventually they did get a team back.
They did, and they're doing pretty well. Yeah, they're doing pretty well, and the team that replaced them, the Milton Keynes Dons, are still the pariahs of the English football establishment.
Yeah, which is why I have a tough time with the Nationals, and it's not against Bryce Harper, and it's not against Ryan Zimmerman, and it's not against any of the players. I just have a difficult time. People often ask me who I root for since the Expos left, and I say I don't. I root for baseball. But I do have trouble with the Nationals. It's one I understand they're a fan base. They are a starving fan base, and much like Montreal, I mean, they went 33 years from when their team left until they got the Nationals back. So there is a part of me that wants to see them do well for their fan base, that wishes them success. And I think there's another part of me that says, wait for us to get our team back before they get to win their World Series.
So that all sounds pretty hopeful, but the question really that's on my lips is, how do you keep that up from London then, Dave? Are you going to be starting the Expos Nation London branch?
I'm still a member of Expos Nation, a proud member of Expos Nation, and much in the way that you and I are speaking over the internet today, it wouldn't matter if I was in London or Timbuktu. I can still be very much involved in the planning and the organizing. I will be in Cooperstown this summer for Tim Raines Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I could not be more excited about it, to be honest with you. I look forward to that. Even if I don't end up getting to a ball game this year, that is better than baseball for me. To have a Montreal Expo going into the Hall of Fame, wearing his Expos cap, oh my goodness, that is as close to how I would feel, I think, if my team were to win the World Series. And keep in mind that the Expos never won a World Series. So this is a sweet victory. This is something that teams that have championships, so a team like the Angels, have never had a Hall of Famer with an Angels cap. So this is a special moment. Yeah, I don't think it matters if you're in London, if you're in Paris, if you're in Montreal, or if you're in Vancouver. And by the way, Vancouver is pretty much equidistant to Montreal as London is. It's just in the other direction. So there are moments where I feel far away, but my heart is there. The discussion has already been had that when the Expos return, that will probably be it for London for us.
You've already told your girlfriend that you can happily coexist as a love triangle, you, her, and the Expos.
Well, let's hope that by then she'll be more than just my girlfriend. And I would imagine my dream would be to work for them. That would be a lifelong dream, would be to work for the team that I have lobbied so hard for their return. And I am in London right now, and I am thrilled to be in London right now, and would love nothing more than the opportunity to help grow this wonderful game of ours here and turn people on to the wonder and the beauty and the magic of baseball. But if I ever get to have my team come back to my hometown, that would be a dream come true, and I would love nothing more than to be a part of it.
So we'll talk a little more about the dream of the Expos in a moment, and hopefully we can dwell for a couple of minutes on my dream, which is getting baseball a little bit more mainstream over here in England. But you touched very briefly there on Tim Raines, and it would feel remiss for us not to spend a little chunk of time talking about that achievement of his in the 10th year on the ballot, the final year on the ballot, finally and unequivocally in the end, making it through to the Hall of Fame. Can you, for those people who are listening to this podcast who maybe aren't aware of him, just are aware of the push that he's had over the last 6 months, particularly from Jonah Kerry. Why is Tim Raines such a special player? Why is he one of Expos Nation's favourites? And why did he deserve the accolade that he's got to be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, if anything, it's a shock that Tim Raines wasn't inducted earlier. It's unfortunately one of the problems with having played the majority of his career, and at least at the peak of his career in Montreal, was that very few people saw him play. Montreal didn't get the same media attention that the Yankees or the Braves or the White Sox or the Cubs ever got. They weren't often on the game of the week on NBC. They weren't often, they were oft overlooked. And unfortunately, that affected Raines's profile. But, you know, one of the stats, and you mentioned Jonah Kerry, and Jonah really did spearhead this initiative to convince the baseball writers of America that Raines deserved the Hall of Fame, but the numbers were there. And Tim Raines had some of the great numbers of all time. One of the things that Raines suffered from was that he was this incredible base stealer. I believe the number is 808 stolen bases. Again, don't quote me. I should have printed out a cheat sheet, but I'm pretty sure that Raines had a success rate of 85% on stealing bases, better than Rickey Henderson. And I mention Rickey Henderson because he played in the shadow of Rickey Henderson, the greatest leadoff hitter of all time. Raines was the second greatest leadoff hitter of all time, but unfortunately they played at the exact same time, and that eclipsed a bit of the stardust from what Raines was accomplishing. Also because, well, as we know, Rickey called himself Rickey. Rickey spoke in the third person and was very vocal about how great he was. And Raines was a lot more unassuming. Raines was a lot more humble. My friend Terry Haig, who used to cover the Expos, he was a color commentator for them on the radio, and he wrote about them for newspapers, said that as great as Raines was, he was so good that he made it look mundane. He made it look so easy. For me, I was just a kid. Tim Raines' peak was really when I was just getting into baseball. He was a superstar. He was a perennial all-star. He was the guy that you would pretend you were when you were playing baseball with your friends. He was a joy to watch. And didn't matter what age you were. Jonah is a few years older than me. Raines was unequivocally his favorite player of all time. When Jonah got the platform that he had, he used it to convince people, rightly, that Raines was one of the great players in the history of baseball. And it's sad that it took 10 years. It shouldn't have taken 10 years. And I don't know if he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know how you decide that. And I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Joe DiMaggio didn't get in on his first ballot.
He didn't. That's correct.
Third, yeah, so I believe. There's some messed up. It's a strange world when you rely on the baseball writers of America.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So he's there now. You're going to get the ceremony this year. And you mentioned a number of times throughout this conversation that you'll be in Cooperstown there, I expect, with a whole posse of Expos fans who are going to be tearing up Cooperstown and showing it the party of its lifetime. So, and I know, if I understand rightly, that you went up there a couple of years ago when another great Expo, Pedro Martinez, was inducted into the Hall of Fame, albeit in the wrong cap for your purposes. I imagine that not many people listening to this, even those of us who watch baseball every day of the week for 6 months of the year, have even dreamed of going to Cooperstown, let alone going there. So can you just give us a bit of an insight into what it's like as a place and what the ceremonies are like, and maybe tell us a little bit about your experiences up there when you were there watching Pedro?
Yeah, I've been to Cooperstown three times, twice for ceremonies and once just on a road trip with a friend. It's about a five-hour drive from Montreal, so it's totally doable. The first time I went was with a bus of Expos Nation fans organized by Expos Nation. And by the way, exposnation.com, if anybody listening here is in the Montreal area, we've organized four buses to go down this summer to the induction. So you can sign up to our mailing list and get the information. As soon as we have it, we'll send it out to you, and you send us your name, and you can get on that bus to Cooperstown with us this summer. I went down in 2010 for Andre Dawson's induction, which was an incredible moment. And he was only the second Expo or player to go in with an Expo's cap. The first was Gary Carter in 2003. Two summers ago now for Pedro's induction was, it was magic, John. It was really one of the great nights of, weekends of my life. We went down, the night before. There were, about 10 or 12 of us, close friends, that went down the night before. First of all, Cooperstown is, if anybody has ever seen a Norman Rockwell painting, the idyllic Saturday Evening Post front covers, you see there's the bunch of famous baseball ones, which is probably where I get the idea. But when you enter Cooperstown with its Main Street USA, you feel like you're in a Norman Rockwell painting. It's this incredible small town feeling where everything is baseball. Every shop on Main Street is baseball related, from the ice cream shops to the memorabilia stores to the somewhat political sign saying, "Let Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame." It's a wonderful little spot on this idyllic lake in northwestern New York State. It is a beautiful, beautiful part of America. And there have been discussions of late of moving the Hall of Fame. I don't know why, but moving it to somewhere like New York City where more people can access it. And I think that would be a shame. This is a village that revolves around baseball. And it's a really cool idea that you have to want to go there. It's not like the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, where you get off the train at Union Station and you're basically staring at the building and anybody and their dog can just walk in. You have to want to go to Cooperstown. There's nothing near it. There is no big city, there's no airport. You have to really go out of your way and get off the main road of the highway and go to Cooperstown. And my goodness, if you have any feel for the game of baseball, I recommend it. I recommend it so highly. It's a magical, magical village, a wonderful place.
I understand that when you were there last time around, a couple of years ago for Pedro, you and some of your Expos friends caused a bit of a furore at the party that the Red Sox threw for the guy.
Okay, so what happened was we attended, about 10 of us went to a dinner that night on Main Street in Cooperstown. We went to an Italian restaurant, and just before the our reservation, there was a parade down Main Street of all the Hall of Famers. They get into the backs of pickup trucks and they drive by and everybody cheers for them. There I was in my 1969 style Montreal Expos jersey with a 10 for Rusty Staub, one of the great players in Expos history. They called him Le Grand Orange. And good old red-haired Rusty. I'm standing there in my Expos cap and my Expos jersey with all my friends who are dressed very, very similarly. And Pedro's coming by in his pickup truck and he sees me and I see him and he points at me and then he points at touches his heart. And it was this wonderful, wonderful moment. And then we thought, okay, we've got to be a part of this tonight. What's the plan? What's going on? And like you mentioned before, Jonah Carey, great baseball writer, really good friend. He reached out to somebody who was a part of the Red Sox media and asked what the team was doing to honor Pedro that evening. And as it turned out, they were holding a private party for Pedro at the at an art museum in Cooperstown. And he said, "Well, do you mind if I come by with a couple of friends?" They said, okay, not expecting Jonah to show up with 10 friends all dressed head to toe in Expos stuff. We walk into this very fancy party where people are dressed in suits, where the commissioner was there. Dan Duquette was there from the Baltimore Orioles, former GM who had Pedro when he was with the Expos and the Red Sox. Dave Dombrowski was there. My goodness, there were so many. It was, we walk in, I'm wearing shorts, John, okay? I'm wearing this Expos jersey and a blue Expos cap and a pair of shorts. I think most of my other friends weren't head-to-toe Expos stuff, but everybody was either wearing an Expos t-shirt or an Expos cap, and we did not fit in at all. Everybody else was dressed up, was befitting this classy party where there's an open bar and canapes and in this museum. It was really fancy, and I felt very underdressed. But there's Pedro. And when we walk in, everybody's quiet. Pedro is addressing the crowd, and he's speaking in English, and he's speaking in Spanish. And he's got a circle of people. His family's there. His brother Ramon, who used to be a great pitcher for the Dodgers, threw a no-hitter once. It's an incredible atmosphere. There might be 100 people there, and suddenly 10% of that is Expos Nation. I pull out my camera and my phone, and I start filming the speech that Pedro's giving. He's got his glass raised in the air, and he's giving a toast. And at one point, he sees me in the middle of his speech. And much in the way that he saw me during that parade when he went by in the back of the pickup truck, he sees me again, and he goes, "Bienvenue, mes amis. Welcome, friends," in French. And just like that, we were in. Pedro was thrilled to see us. A couple of the people that we were with, including Mitch Melnick, who's one of my mentors and has since become a good friend, but he was his show was a legendary Montreal radio show. It's still on, and that was how I got my break into radio, was interning on Mitch Melnick's show the winter after the Expos left. And when he saw Mitch, he threw his arms around him. If you follow Mitch on Twitter, he's at Hunter Z. Thompson, and his profile picture is when Pedro hugs him that night at the party. It's a beautiful photo. So Pedro was just thrilled to see us and thrilled that he could share that night with the Expos. I knew that the mayor of Montreal was coming to the ceremony the next day. So I sent him a DM on Twitter, and we follow each other. And his name is Denis Coderre. He used to be a federal member of parliament, and he's now the great mayor of our city. And I sent him a DM saying, "Mr. Mayor, we're at the Red Sox party." And he's never responded so fast to me in his life. He wrote back, said, "I'll be there in 5 minutes." Jonah and I go around the front of this museum, and it's late at night, and it's dark in this small town. There are no streetlights. And there is the mayor of Montreal skulking in the shadows. And we bring him around the back and into the party. And that was the night that we snuck the mayor of Montreal into a Red Sox party for Pedro Martinez. And one of the great nights in Expos Nation history, something we'll never forget.
Brilliant. And I guess that you and the team in Expos Nation have got a similar party planned for Tim Raines, where the dress code absolutely will be shorts and caps, as opposed to the flash suits of the Boston liberal elite.
Well, I don't know about that liberal elite knock there, John. Come on now. That's not too fair. But I think that what's going to happen, hopefully, if all goes to plan, Expos Nation and Montreal will get to throw the party for Tim Raines. If he's going in an Expos cap, let's fingers crossed. I know that Jonah's working on it now. But wouldn't that be special if we got to throw the party? Even though there isn't a team yet, we should still be able to honor him. And, let's cross our fingers that we can do that 2 years in a row, and that Vlad goes in an Expos cap as well in 2018.
Well, he would be able to deny the petitions of the Montreal Expos if you manage to pull that off 2 years in a row.
It's one of the things that has always given me hope about getting a team back is that no city that has lost a major league franchise has ever not gotten one back. Every team, let me make that less negative. Every team that's lost a team, every city that's lost a team has gotten it back eventually. It took 33 years for Washington, but they got their team back. And there's no reason to think. I guess if you want to make an exception to that, it's Brooklyn. But they did get a team in Queens less than 10 years later. Yeah. So New York City did lose a team, but they got it. They lost two teams, but they got one back. And I'm pretty sure that's why the Mets have the colors that they do. It's to honor the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants. That's why it's the same blue as the Dodgers and the orange as of the Giants. But Let's hope that one of these years, John, you'll be able to come to Montreal and go to what will be a new, beautiful Stade Jackie Robinson Stadium, and come and watch the brand new version of the Montreal Expos.
Yeah, well, that would be quite a thing. And it sounds like I'd have a pretty good chaperone in you, Dave.
Damn straight.
Quickly, before we bring this thing to a close, there were a couple of things I wanted to touch on slightly bigger topics. Not that the Expos isn't in and of itself a huge topic which we could spend all day talking about. The first was relevant to the Expos, and the second is sort of taking it away another step. I just wanted to touch briefly and get your thoughts on baseball as a sport in Canada. It seems, as an outside observer, that it's very much, if anything, a sort of third sport, obviously behind hockey, but also behind football, particularly with the Canadian Football League being such a big deal to Canadian citizens and Canadian sports fans. Do you think that the lack of the Expos is part of that? And do you think that there's a way they can cut through it? And I just, within that, wanted to talk about the importance of the resurgent Blue Jays in the last two or three years, who have, to all intents and purposes, been Canada's team.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely Canada's team. I would disagree with your assessment on football. I think that if anything, the National Football League is still much bigger than the Canadian Football League. The CFL has pockets. It doesn't really resonate in large Canadian cities. Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal are not hotbeds for CFL football. You see it more in smaller towns. You see it in Saskatchewan. You see it in Alberta. There they get great crowds and very passionate fans for the CFL. But the way that the NFL has marketed itself, I've come across a stat several times that the NFL actually has more viewers per capita in Canada than it does in the United States. But I still look at football as an event, right? If you have an NFL team or a CFL team in your city, that's 8 games a year. That's all it is. It's 8 games a year. You only need to sell out your stadium 8 times. If you have a baseball team, 81 games, home games a season. It's a very different thing. And I think the Blue Jays have done a lot to help grow the game across the country. We've seen a resurgence in, there are plenty of all-star Canadians right now. Guys like Joey Votto that give kids someone to look up to and say, I'm from Canada. Yeah, the weather isn't perfect, but if I work hard and train, I can be a professional baseball player. It used to be that the great baseball players in Canada only came out of British Columbia, but that's not the case anymore. You see guys coming out of Quebec. You see guys coming out of Ontario. You know, someone like Eric Gagne, 12 years ago, winning a Cy Young Award from Mascouche, Quebec, just outside of Montreal. That helped a lot of young Quebecois, young French-Canadian kids say that hockey wasn't the only outlet, the only avenue. And if you go back in the day, it used to really be baseball and hockey. Kids would play hockey in the winter and play baseball in the summer. A lot of the great National Hockey League stars, the great stars of yesteryear on the vaunted Montreal Canadiens, used to play baseball in the summer and used to play in organized, really high quality leagues in the summer. I know that guys like Rocket Richard and Doug Harvey were known as great baseball players as well as Hall of Fame hockey players. So I don't think that football is number two. I think that baseball is number two. And I think that we've seen so much excitement around the Blue Jays. And, you know, that's been hard for me as an Expos fan to see the Blue Jays selling out the Olympic Stadium in Montreal for exhibition games the last few seasons. I have to look at it from a pragmatic point of view, that it's good for baseball, not necessarily that it's good for Toronto. I don't know if it's a similar rivalry to London and Manchester or to London and Paris, but at home we compare the rivalry of Montreal and Toronto to that of Boston and New York. So imagine how Red Sox fans would feel with the Yankees sitting in their dugout.
I'd say that's more like Manchester and Liverpool, really, if we're being honest.
Okay, yeah, whereas I guess there isn't really a comparison in this country for London. There's nothing as giant. But yeah, it's sure, Manchester and Liverpool is a great comparison then. There's always been a real rivalry between Montreal and Toronto, and that has been only magnified by political instability in Montreal. Quebec, the province that Montreal is in, nearly separated from Quebec, from Canada twice in my lifetime, once in the early 1980s, once in the mid-1990s, and that saw a lot of the business that was in Montreal move westward to Toronto. And frankly, one of the reasons that Toronto is as cool a city as it is right now is because 500,000 Montrealers live there. Montreal is it's the most European city in North America. It's got a real joie de vivre that Toronto doesn't necessarily have. Some say it's from the Catholic influence of French Canada versus the Protestant influence of Ontario. Toronto is a city that closes down a lot earlier than Montreal. Ottawa, which is it's the capital of the country, it used to be home to the Expos AAA team, the Ottawa Lynx, now to the Can-Am champion, Ottawa Champions, originally named Ottawa Champions. Good thing they won in their second season, or that name might not have been so fitting. But yeah. Former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, the father of our current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, once joked that the best thing about Ottawa was the train to Montreal. And I think that joke applies for Toronto as well, where things close down a little bit earlier. It's just not as rambunctious and wild of a town. But Toronto's a great city. It really is. And the team has garnered a lot of excitement across the country, especially, as you said, in the last few years. The best baseball game I've been to since the Expos left, I happened to go to the bat flip game.
Oh, wow.
In your podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, before the series started, said, I've got a ticket for you for game 5 if you want to come. Toronto went and lost the first two games. And I remember I just kept writing on his Facebook wall, I'll see you Wednesday. I'll see you Wednesday. I'll see you Wednesday. And they actually made it to Wednesday. And I jumped in the car and drove to Toronto, a 5.5-hour drive, went to the ball game, and then drove home.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a heck of a...
You'd be high as a kite after that, I expect.
Well, thankfully not, because I had to drive.
Well, I figuratively speaking, adrenaline.
Absolutely. We were all flying. It was a different perspective. Sitting there with my friend Chris, who's a proud member of Expos Nation, he was a Montrealer who moved to Toronto in his youth. I was sitting at that game. I wasn't, you know, I was definitely happier for Toronto. I didn't want Texas to win, but one of the things that I've often said about cheering for the Blue Jays, and by de facto, that's been the team that I end up watching the most because they're the ones that are on television. You don't feel the same highs when the Jays win, and you don't feel any lows when they lose. That's how I've always known that I can't find a team that I'll be as passionate about as I was with the Expos. Because when the Expos won, I was over the moon. And when the Expos lost, it destroyed me. It's meant that I spent a lot of time feeling destroyed, but I haven't had that sadness since the Expos left. And I won't get to feel that happiness until they return.
Wow. I hope that you one day get to feel sad again, Dave.
We will. We will. I can't wait to feel that sadness. And that's the beauty of baseball. I mean, my God, imagine a season where the Expos play 600 ball. That still means that 40% of the time I'm going to be frowning.
Yeah, quite. That is the beauty of the game, isn't it? And it's a bit of a strange thing that you're watching it over here. And obviously, this will be something you would get used to if indeed the Expos came back and you were in London, at least for a transitional period, is getting up in the morning, having been unable to stay up, because you can't 162 nights a year. You've got to go to bed at a sensible time sometimes. Getting up in the morning and looking at the box score and your day being ruined at 7 a.m., that's not a good start to the day, believe me.
Wow. That'll remind me of being a kid when I couldn't stay up to watch the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's it. Particularly if you look at the box score and it's something tragic like a two-run walk-off when your closer's in the bottom of the ninth. Those are the rough days during the summer, I have to say.
Once again, I hold steadfast to the fact that if they come back, I'll be able to have enough of a heads up that that transition period will be me working on getting back to Montreal and being a part of it. I joined the sports radio station a couple of months after they left. I have always been somebody who has been a keeper of the gate, a waver of the flag, and in the hope that when they return, I'll get to be front and center and be a part of it. And there's no doubt in my mind that is what will happen.
And well, my fingers and all my toes are crossed for you, and I guess that everyone listening will think the same. But in the meantime, you're here in London, and as a man who's freshly into the country, got a completely different perspective, I just wanted to ask you what your view is on how we as a country can go better about embracing this fantastic sport. What do you think that the MLB and the Baseball Softball UK and the organisations and the teams that are out there playing the game on parks on Sunday afternoons should be doing to try and get more fans involved and to provide something better for the teams and the fans that there already are?
I think it's very important to look at what the National Football League has done here over the last 20 years. And for lack of a better term, piggyback on that and copy that model. I would love nothing more than to get involved and to try and help show. I believe that passion is infectious, and I would love nothing more than to be able to speak about my passion for this game and try and help people catch that fever. You do a wonderful job with your podcast. I think part of it is like you said off the top, people don't know who Jackie Robinson is here. I've heard British people say the phrase quicker than you can say Jack Robinson, and it has nothing to do with Jackie Robinson. I don't know who that Jack Robinson is, but the history of the game is amazing, and I understand that what our version of North American history is actually current in England. One of the things that I am so passionate about here is how old everything is. You don't see that at home. In Montreal, there's a beautiful part of the city called Old Montreal. It's down by the water. It's the part of the city that was first developed. And if that part of the city were in London, it wouldn't be called Old. It would just be called Montreal.
Yeah. I found the same in Boston when I went there. It's like, oh, look at the oldest buildings in the United States of America. And I was just like, wow, that just looks about 50 years old.
Exactly. It's a very different feeling. You know, Montreal is this year celebrating her 375th anniversary, 1642, whereas I was just up in Newcastle, where they're celebrating the 800th anniversary of, I want to say, like an organized city, of people voting or of having mayors. Or there's something like that, whereas in Montreal, 800 years ago, it was Native Americans, and we don't have that history. That was an oral tradition. Shamefully, so much of it was wiped out by the white men when Jacques Cartier and de Maisonneuve arrived in the 1600s. It's a very different ball game, John. I would like to see, you know, who cared about football here 20, 25 years ago? North American football, the NFL. I think very few people. Whereas now there's this wonderful subculture. I like you mentioned before, I did the NFL show with Nat Coombs this week. And the amount of tweets and questions and comments I've gotten from fans all over this country, people really know their football and are really into it. And part of that is from having the games at Wembley, and part of that is from having it on television. Can you watch baseball on TV right now, or do you need an MLB TV account?
You need an account, yeah. You can. It's on BT Sport on their ESPN feed, but it's a couple of games a week, only if you have BT Sport, and I believe that the subscriptions are, well, the people who are actually picking up those feeds are tiny. There's no analysis, there's no after-game conversations, there's no one breaking it down for you, there's no one explaining the rules. It's a very different proposition to what Sky and indeed BBC are doing with football, where people like O.C. Omanura and Jeff Reinable are there every step of the way, making sure that you can understand it.
Whereas you told me when we first met that you got into baseball because it was on late at night when you were in university, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, so that creates that subculture, but unless you sustain it, it's not going to last. I think that the history of baseball is so rich that I could see people here getting behind that. The literary aspect of baseball. We mentioned the John Updike short story before. There has been so much great writing done on baseball that I guess here would be on soccer/football. But most great American writers, from Walt Whitman, the poet in the 1860s, through to today, so much wonderful, wonderful baseball writing that I think that might be an in to people. I would love to see players come over here and conduct clinics. I would love to see, I would like to see more of an effort done to get to grow this game, to put a glove in a 6-year-old kid's hands. Because one of the reasons that I love baseball as much as I do is because I fell upon it at a very young age. I was a little kid going to ball games with my grandfather. My grandfather was from New York City. And he grew up watching Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig play. And I got to hear stories about Babe Ruth and my grandfather taking the ferry from Staten Island and then heading up to the Bronx to go watch Babe Ruth play. I don't know if those stories were true or not, but man, did they resonate. It's a game that is passed on from grandfather to grandson, from father to son. From mother to daughter. Baseball and film is another great one. I was flipping channels the other night. I saw that A League of Our Own was on TV here.
Yeah, I saw that too. It was on over Christmas. Yeah. Let's use Madonna.
Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell, Gina Davis, Tom Hanks, and the true story of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, which filled a void during the Second World War when baseball did continue to play, but not at the same level and not with the same quality. And a lot of small towns in the U.S. had these women's teams. And when you go to Cooperstown, there's a whole section devoted to it, and it's amazing to see.
So that sounds like a pretty good and comprehensive laundry list. I guess it's up to you and I, Div, and anyone else listening who wants to volunteer. We all need to get on board this train, and we just need to do it right.
Let's do it. I think maybe we'll start. Let's each grab a glove. I'll meet you in front of Buckingham Palace, and we'll just start playing catch. And people ask questions, and maybe the next day we'll move to Trafalgar Square, and then the next day we'll move over to Hyde Park, and we'll just keep going to these really iconic spots and playing catch, and maybe it'll rub off on people.
Let's just hope that none of us have got any errant throws and we're not knocking over some tourists because that might actually attract some attention.
Hey, you know what? That'll make one of the papers here, right? That'll make one of the tabloids.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that's what we should do. I think we've cracked it.
No, tourists. Amazing.
I think that feels like a good point at which to bring the conversation to a close. It's been really brilliant talking to you, Dave. I've really enjoyed listening to the stories about the Expos and listening to your enthusiasm and passion for your team and listening to your hopes for the future. And it feels as though I've come away from this conversation with a little bit of me as an Expos fan and certainly knowing a lot more about the organisation. I feel a little bit more rooted to the cause than I was an hour or so ago.
Mission accomplished then.
Mission accomplished. And I hope everyone who listens at home on their commute to work feels exactly the same.
Great. I just want to say, if anybody wants to talk further about Montreal baseball or social issues in sports or some of my favorite Canadian music like the Tragically Hip, you can follow me on Twitter at The Kaufman Show, KAUFMAN, and I'm more than happy to continue the conversation.
Well, you completely stole my thunder there. I was just going to ask you how we would get hold of you. So there we are, The Kaufman Show. That's where you go. And if you want to hear about the Tragically Hip, that is definitely where you go. I follow Dave on Twitter and he talks about them all the time. And I've enjoyed going away and listening to their music too. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at @batflips_nerds. You can see us talking to Dave about the Tragically Hip, planning our own trips to Cooperstown and plotting the takeover of baseball in the British sporting world for the years to come. So, Dave, thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we'll get you back on soon to talk about some more general issues. I'm sure the Expos will creep in because, you know, old habits die hard and all that, but it's been fantastic to introduce everyone to you and to hear about your passion for the game this morning. Thanks a lot.
John, thank you. Thank you so much, and cannot wait to hang out and watch some baseball with you, my friend. I really appreciate this opportunity, and so much fun. And once again, my hat's off to you. What you do here, this is an uphill battle, and you do it with aplomb. So much in the same way that we've tried to grow baseball and regenerate it in Quebec, you're doing yeoman's work to grow it around the globe, and I salute you.
Well, that's very kind of you, Dave. I'm honoured. That's a very nice way to start off my Sunday morning. And thanks very much to every one of you who's listening, everyone who's subscribing, following the Twitter feed. You're all part of this too. We're starting a revolution, and it sounds like we've got a cheerleader in Dave. Thank you very much, and we'll speak to you again soon.